Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners, an episode filled with your stories, and up top, one of my own, which kind of comes in handy this week. Yes, of course, I love your stories, and I've been compiling them, and I'm hoping for more and more, because I love sharing your stories. And tonight, we have some incredible, compelling, uplifting, and sometimes heartbreaking at certain points, but it's just the kind of content that I think we are all interested in. It makes us feel normal to know that other people have gone through stuff and that interesting things exist in the world. Tragic things exist. And I think we're a community of true crime listeners, especially the Seven Deadly Sinners crew, that are interested in the complicated, the unknown, and matters of the heart. I think we are a group of people who are just, like I said, interested in the interesting, ever exploring our curious and frankly, I think, I speak for all of us, vigilante mindset. But before we get into the incredible listener stories, I would like to tell a story up top of my own. And quick side note, if you do have a story, any story, like I said, family secrets, historical ghosts, you know, creepy mansions you creeped into as a kid, you know, hauntings, cryptids, murders in your hometown, murders anywhere you've heard about, or, you know, a woman or a man getting scammed by a lover, it's all on the table. Maybe a cool sports story. I've been real into baseball lately, and you're going to know why in just a second. But before I get into the first story, I will be joined tonight by Greg, who is actually going to be the one to read the Indiana story, specifically because, well, he loves this podcast, but he loves Indiana more. He works on this podcast, but because it's Indiana, I must do him the honors of reading it because he's the most proud of a state that anyone I've ever known to be. Sure, I grew up in Oregon. Great. But I'm not about ready to get a tattoo of Oregon across my chest. And I'm pretty sure if someone dared Greg to get Indiana tattooed across his chest, he would do it. Without further ado, here's Greg Hunter.
You wouldn't have to dare me necessarily. If I was to get tattoos, I currently have zero. Which I've got a couple ideas for a few, but like it's never really been my thing. But
I want to know what they are.
So. If I got one, I'd definitely get an Indiana tattoo like second.
Yeah? Where would you put it?
Well, you know, this bicep's been getting pretty big. There's a lot of real estate on it. Okay. So I'm thinking wow. I could do the whole state.
Wow.
That's a joke. Woo! Probably over my heart. No, that's like reserved for something for you. I don't know.
Okay. Well, butt cheek, next maybe? I just said, I was already going to say, next time you go to prison, you've never been in prison, you've never been arrested. So let's just...
Well, that's not entirely true.
When you were a teenager, jumping from building to building or something?
No prison time, but have been arrested.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't even been arrested.
That's for the next listener tales, I guess.
Okay, all right.
I haven't been arrested since I was out of college. Okay? All right?
Wait, well.
It was all the Bloomington police. It wasn't. Okay. They were out to get me.
This is for another day. Good for you, though. You got street cred. I always thought I did because I got threatened by the Mongols. But
me
anyways.
Me and Hans slept back to back.
Okay.
In the...
Yeah. They don't know who Hans is. But I would love to hear this later. But I'm happy you're going to do the Indiana story because I know anytime like we're listening to a podcast and they mention Indiana, he's like, he lights up and he's like, he's got something to say. Like,
I might just start the Indiana
podcast.
And I
actually love that you...
I love Indiana. Love being from Indiana. Go Hoosiers. Go Pacers. Go to the Indy 500 if you've never been. Look, Kurt Vonnegut said it, and I believe it's true. There's a Hoosier doing something important everywhere.
I love it.
He's obviously from Indiana, if you guys didn't know. So we got all the great people.
Unless he's stalking Indiana.
Hey, first man to walk on the moon and the man to invent the moonwalk. Michael Jackson, Neil Armstrong. I mean, come on now.
I didn't know that Michael Jackson. Okay, well, this is all.
The list goes on.
Okay, this is not an Indiana podcast. I should. Listen, this was my mistake. I understand that. I apologize to you guys.
We could change this to 7 interesting facts about Indiana real quick.
if you see that show up on the Apple Podcasts like top 100 list and you're like, what's that from? Oh, probably know that it's Greg's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, well, I'm excited to be with you guys tonight. Yeah, please send in any other listener stories. Number one, I love to hear them. And number two, they came in handy this week because I'm about to start this episode with a story of my own. So this story took place shortly after Memorial Day. So, you know, I lived in LA for 15 years, grew up in Oregon. Oregon doesn't really, where I lived, didn't really have weather because I grew up on the coast. So never really learned to drive in snow or hail or certainly rain I could handle. And then I lived in Southern California for about 15 years. And I have never been used to weather changes so rapidly since moving to Colorado. And I leave our ranch. I'm on our county road, which the speed limit is 55. I was probably going, 35, 40. Nothing aggressive because I'm always looking out for like antelope or something like jumping into the, you know, road. So I always go like mostly extra slow. People can pass me if they want, but usually there's no other cars on the road. And so I get about, let's go 3 miles off our ranch. And all of a sudden, like a torrential hailstorm comes down with marble-sized hail. I could barely see. I was unsure of what to do. And I didn't realize at the time, there's only one like kind of big downslope on this road before you get on the highway. I didn't realize I was like right before, because I visually could not see. There was so much hail coming down. And I didn't realize I was coming down like the downslope part. I don't know if that probably made it worse. But again, I couldn't see, so I didn't know. And so I'm driving down, the road, and this hailstorm hits like immediately. And this happens a lot in Colorado where just the weather changes on a dime. And so I notice that my truck starts to swerve to the right. And I'm trying to kind of correct it. And then the whole truck goes like basically horizontal, or that would be perpendicular. Yeah, perpendicular to the road. And then my truck starts sliding along the road. And I end up sort of on like the ditch side of it where the trees are. I believe it's possible that then my truck corrected to go forward, but it was off the road now into the ditch. But at a certain point when it was going horizontal to the road or perpendicular, I was like, this truck's going to flip. Like, I remember every second of it. This was like 1 p.m. I don't know why I need to say this, dead sober. Like, I was just trying to go run an errand, whatever. And it just is starting to go horizontal. And I'm like, this truck's going to flip. I'm about ready to flip this truck. I'm like, this is not going to be good. That's not what happened. I believe it's possible, based on what we've looked at, that it kind of went up on an embankment and then just started sort of like going like, you know, the two left-hand tires, like the passenger side tires, and then the driver's side tires on the lower part, the passenger side tires are on the top of the embankment. And I just start plowing through trees. When I see trees, I consider them bushes, because growing up in Oregon, and my dad's a logger, so like I know huge trees. To me, like a redwood or a big like cedar tree is a big tree. These are like juniper trees, but in comparison, they look like bushes, but in comparison, and thankfully, they also saved my life. So I'm now on like, you know, I'm now in the like the dirt and whatever and trees. And all I can see on all sides of me, the passenger side window, my driver's side window, the whole like front windshield or whatever, is just tree. Like, it's just like it's hit me at all sides. Like, I felt like I was just driving straight through a forest. Branches everywhere. I believe I maybe tried to like turn again. I don't know. Or I may have just, I didn't black out because I remember everything. But when I say blackout, meaning like, I don't even think I knew what to do at that point. And so I kind of just let the truck ride. And I believe God was on my side at this point, because then I was stopped by hitting a tree head on the driver's side. It didn't go into the windshield because all the airbags, deployed or whatever. Nailed a tree. The truck is completely totaled, by the way. The photos, maybe we'll post on Instagram, but that might be too graphic. And I should have said a trigger warning up top. I had meant to, because car crashes can be very sensitive to people who have been in them and who have lost people through them. So I'm going to have Greg edit in a trigger warning up top, because I meant to say that. It's traumatizing for me now, but when Greg comes back in the room, if we kind of joke around about this, it's sort of our like way of getting through something that was really, really, really scary. So I hope that's not offensive, but humor is my way of getting through things. So I apologize if it's offensive. Anyways, so I slammed straight into a tree, and I've never been in an accident like this. Like, when I first got my license, I was a moron. I would, like, rear end things or sideswipe things because I didn't understand that you had to pay attention. But I've been a very good driver for the last 15 years or whatever. Yeah, and so basically, yeah, slid on hail, went, took out 7 trees before I went head first into another one. All airbags deployed. I'm shaking like a leaf. My body was reverberating. Like, I knew I didn't hit my face. That didn't feel like it hurt. Especially since I'd broken my nose so many times, I would know if like something had been hit there. But immediately on impact, I felt my back, like my lower back. I was like, something's bad here. And I was by myself. But once the truck finally stopped, I started seeing smoke, and then I got paranoid and scared, and I was like, I have to get out of this truck. And so, I don't know why I'm going to cry, maybe because it was a week ago, and it was really scary. I just got out of the hospital yesterday. Basically, I felt like I needed to get out from the driver's, you know, door or whatever, but in between the airbags deploying and the driver's side fender, lodging up into the door, I could barely open the driver's side door, maybe a foot and a half. I couldn't go further. I tried once to get out and I gave up but then I was just like, I counted to 10 and I was like, get yourself out of here. And so I crawled head first through that little crack, like army crawled on the ground just to get far enough away in case the truck blew up, and then just like laid on the ground until anyone would show up. It was pretty traumatic. Basically after that, I first called my father-in-law because I couldn't get a hold of Greg right away. He answered because my father-in-law visits our property a lot, and I just basically started screaming, I've been in a wreck and whatever. They start coming, then I dial 911, and I'm just like laying on the side of the road like a limp piece of spinach, just like, I don't know what to do, and hopefully no one else runs off the road because then they're going to run into me.
But thankfully, the next car on the road was my dad and I. We rushed over there. My dad, I came down. So the reason I didn't answer the phone when Rachel called me is because I was in the midst of driving up to our house that's in the process of being built to cover her garden. We just made a garden box and had put all these vegetables in it. And at the time, I thought that was her biggest concern. Well, because the crazy thing about this weather pattern, so Rachel was leaving to run her errands, and it had just started raining, and we remembered that we didn't put the shade net up back over the garden box we had just built and put in vegetables and different herbs and spices. So anyhow, we were like, oh, well, I'm going to go cover that right now. So I left our ranch house where my dad is at, and our house that we're in the process of building is probably half a mile away from that. And by the time that I got to our garden bed up there, there was golf ball size hail falling. So it was just like that instantaneous. Just a wall of hail swept over our ranch. It was like an ice bath was pouring. But anyhow, it was so loud. And I had my winter coat on and rubber waders, no socks. I'm in gym shorts, and I'm just, you know, we had been eating breakfast. Anyhow, I'm covering this up, and so I couldn't feel my cell phone. And I get back down to the ranch house, and my dad is, like, waiting outside, ready to go. And I'm very confused. He tells me Rachel hit a tree. And I'm like, what? And like, it didn't even occur to me that that could be a possibility. And then like, it's hailing. And then he just jumps in the car and we start heading down the road. And literally, by the time we get up to where the start of the hill is, that Rachel had then started to go down, the hail had stopped. It was just this freak, like I said, wall of hail, like I've never seen before. And I'm still just like blown away, like just golf ball, like the entire road was covered. So she was like driving on golf balls or marbles. But anyhow, we start to go over the apex of this hill, and I start to see missing trees. One tree's gone. Another tree's gone. Branches are, like, shaved down. I can't even see the truck yet. And I'm starting to freak out. And then we pull up. I see Rachel on the ground. I realize the reason she wasn't responding to my calls was because she was on the phone with 911, which was the right move to stay on the phone with him. Good call. I was already on the way. Glad you didn't switch over. I'm just calling you as we're driving for no good reason, I guess. And I'm just like blown away at the state of our truck. It's like dented all over. And, you know, like it got hit by a tree on all sides.
My mom said when I sent her the photo of him, like when you took a photo from after it was towed or whatever, my dad said the same thing. They sent me a text. But then when I talked on the phone with her, she said it was very hard to look at. But she said, even when my dad flipped, like my dad's a logger, and at one point he had a tire blowout in Oregon, it's like cliffs on each side. At least it were kind of like on prairie ground, but there's still, you're going to hear about a ravine a little bit. But my dad once had a tire blowout and he flipped his truck off of like a, I mean, let's go with 60 feet. It rolled several times. He walked away from it because he's a badass and I'm also his daughter. So I essentially walked away from it until I realized I couldn't because I had a back injury.
Those O'Briens are made of actually poured cement.
But my dad, when he looked at the photo, I asked him, I said, did you ever wreck a truck like that? He's like, I have never seen a truck like that wrecked by like no one knows how you survived. So Greg couldn't see the damage on the truck, nor could I. I mean, I was just like, get myself out of the truck, army crawl on the ground and just lay there and then make jokes when people come.
Yeah, into the... couldn't see it all. I mean, like the truck was in the tree. And we had a water tank that we use all over our ranch, be it our horse, water the garden, water the trees, different ones we planted, you know. Anyhow, that had smashed into the back of the truck bed, which, like, usually there's like a 2 or 3 inch gap, and that was like pushing into the back of it. Anyhow, the really blew me away was the 7 cedar trees that were no longer standing that Rachel had. You know, just like your dad.
Rachel, I'm a logger's daughter.
She's a logger's daughter. She just, you know, I'm going to call her the timber faller. So she turned our truck into a feller buncher and just took out all these trees. It's a miracle that a tree branch didn't go through the windshield because there are, and this is not a joke, the way that these like cedars come out, like each, you know, root ball has 4 or 5 tree branches. So she took out, and I'm not kidding, like 45 6 to 8 inch tree branches. Any one of those could have just gone through, you know, if they had grown the right way and she hit it with the right angle as she was fishtailing through this grove, this pine grove, could have gone through the windshield, you know, part of a branch. And
maybe Robert Tilton's with me. If you haven't listened to this podcast from the beginning, I did a lot of televangelist stories, but maybe at a past life, I gave him my $1,000.
I don't think it's Robert Tilton. No.
I think it's the real God up there and people we've lost in our lives. Something stopped me.
Something was looking out for her because 10 feet from the tree that stopped her, there's like a 15-foot ravine. So, and it's the last tree before the ravine. So somehow she took out all these other trees, but this last tree stopped her. And even more wild is that she didn't roll the truck. Not only is she driving on marbles, but like these trees are growing up on an embankment that is at least 8 feet tall. And our truck ramped up on that embankment and took out these trees. The wrecker who pulled the truck out when I went to go visit the truck repeatedly said to me, I don't understand how this didn't flip. And besides a miracle, our only thinking is that the tree branches, you know, well, kept hitting the roof down. But it was, let's get back to the scene. I'm there with my dad. My dad is super calm, being stoic and taking care of business. I'm freaking out. I'm like,
probably screaming at first because, like, what happened? What happened? What happened? I'm in shock. Just like hurt myself emotionally, so scared. Like, I'm just like, ah. And luckily, the two calmest people there were definitely my dad and Rachel, not me. Anyhow, God bless the EMTs that got here within 5 minutes of me and my dad. I don't know how they were there that fast. We live in the middle of nowhere, so
they were awesome. Well, I was calling one, and then OnStar, which was in our vehicle, called them. But they were very sweet. And one of the EMTs that was on the scene was also the one that drove me, like, not didn't life flight me because we didn't take a helicopter, but basically I was life ambulanced.
Lifelined.
Yeah, to Colorado Springs. But I didn't remember that he was on the scene. I was so, like, in such pain that they kept trying to move me, and they had to cut off my sweat. That was the first time they cut clothes off me.
I got to interrupt here and say, literally, so Rachel's wearing a sweatshirt from her friend James, her friend Kristen's company, James May. And they're like, is it okay if we cut this? And Rachel's like, oh yeah, my friend owns this company. I can get another. Just don't even worry about it. Cut it right off. Just cracking jokes. As the EMTs there are like putting her on a stretcher, and cutting her clothes off.
But I was screaming in pain because I was very afraid because, I'm sure I've told this story on maybe not this podcast, maybe my old podcast, but like way before I met Greg, I used to date, a really impressive young man, not one I would want to marry, shout out Robbie, but who, he was a college baseball player. I dated him after he was paralyzed, but like maybe 4 years after he was paralyzed. We were pretty young, but he was a college baseball player. They had just won the, you can look him up, Rob Summers, the College World Series, and he was just at the end of his driveway at Oregon State, and a driver who was likely drunk, I'm guessing, hit him and hit. It was a hit and run. And so his roommates, he was like laying on kind of on the side of the road. He was there like trying to get something out of the back of his truck. I don't know. Hit and run. His roommates didn't know that you're not supposed to move someone like without like stabilization after that kind of injury. So this is a good lesson to anyone. And they drug him out of the road. They then drug him upstairs, and he ended up being paralyzed because he had a bruised spinal cord. And perhaps if they had just stabilized him, he may have not ended up paralyzed. I'm glad I accepted the ambulance that the 911, because that came into my head. But at first when I called 911, I was like, don't send an ambulance. I'm fine. My father-in-law and my husband can take me to the hospital. Like, I can't afford an ambulance visit. Like, whatever.
Yeah,
that could have cost me my mobility.
Actively denying the ambulance, actually, when my dad and I pulled up.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad and I said, just get the ambulance. Yeah. Like, we don't know. But that's such a good note.
Yeah.
If you're ever around someone who had a big traumatic injury and they're talking about any sort of back pain,
don't move them.
Keep them flat. Keep them flat until you can get the EMTs there that'll have a gurney. Yeah. And will know how to stabilize the spine. You know, I attribute so much
Shout out
to the EMTs in Los Animas County.
Huefrano counties, they came from there too.
Huefrano, wherever they came from, I don't know if we'll ever see you again, but God bless you.
Thank you. They were also very sweet. They were sweet. Kind.
They were awesome.
Because the whole time I kept telling them, please don't move me wrong. I don't want to be paralyzed.
But
they were just being realistic, but what was like a little bit scary is I kept just being like, just tell me I'm not going to be paralyzed. And they were like, move your feet. Can you feel it? I'm like, yeah. So I'm not going to be paralyzed. And they're like, right now you're fine.
That's a real good sign.
Yeah.
They wouldn't
give me the sign off. I mean, they haven't even given me the sign off now. I'm currently in a back brace. But, I mean, they can't probably legally say that. And it's probably true. If I had a good fall right now, my spinal cord's technically exposed. So, you know, who knows? But
yeah, she's still very at risk and nothing heals slower than the spine.
Yeah.
But that was one thing that was killing me. I knew they couldn't say anything. They couldn't lie to you, but I'm like, maybe it's a good lie, a good little white lie
to just say
you're going to be fine. You're definitely not going to be paralyzed, but they wouldn't say that. And I knew Rachel was having, you know, paranoia from her past trauma with her old boyfriend. You know, he got paralyzed after the accident, mm-hmm. and, you know, she's in so much pain, and it's hard to trust anybody you've never met before suddenly moving your body when you can't. You know, and that was the hard thing for me too, is like they're kind of pushing me away and I'm like, I'm the strongest one here. I will make sure her back stays straight.
They did a really good job though, and I've realized like how easy it actually is because I've been transferred from ambulance to, or from ground to ambulance, ambulance to hospital, hospital bed to ambulance, ambulance to hospital bed to MRI, hospital bed to back to
I feel like
a CAT scan. And they have a good system. They put you in a sheet. You put your arms in front of your chest. Sheet,
like a mummy.
And they just say, you don't move your body, we move it for you.
Exactly.
And they just move you over.
That seemed so smooth. The hardest transition was when they didn't have a sheet under you at the actual scene of the crash where you're laying on the grass and they only have a gurney. That was, and you were clearly writhing in so much pain and they wouldn't let me help, which was the right move because obviously it's the right move. But watching you in that pain right there was, I'd rather be punched in the stomach 100 times than witness it again.
I love you. You were very sweet. And the guy that was on scene, I didn't realize it was him. He was also on the ambulance that took me from the Trinidad ER to Colorado Springs that night or whatever. He was like, yeah, you're looking a lot better. I was like, did I meet you? He's like, I was there when we pulled you off the ground. And I was like, sorry, I didn't know that.
Been a hell of a day.
Yeah. Can't win them all. Anyways, guys, well, that's my listener story. And Greg was the sweetest man ever. He slept on the floor of the hospital. His dad also slept on the floor of my second hospital room. Then Greg stayed with me for a few days. I'll be fine. Don't worry about me. But yeah, that was pretty traumatic. And so we all got something going on. And
it was very traumatic. The story goes on and on. I mean, that actually, it was just the beginning. I mean, in so many ways, the story doesn't start until we get to the hospital. And, you know, as it just kept getting more and more wild and she was, you know, unable to move her back. She needed to stay completely stabilized and she wasn't allowed to have water for 30 some hours. Awaiting surgery, and it just was hard to watch your wife, you know, be there in so much pain. We had actually been in a hospital the night before for a small injury I had. I needed 7 stitches, crazy accident, and so we were like, ah, that's going to be the worst, and then boom, we're back in the hospital again for the second time in 12 hours. It was pretty funny. I had saw the doctor who'd stitched me up the night before him, and he was like, what are you doing here? Like, oh, my wife's in that operating room. It's been a wild time, completely unrelated to accident. And then, yeah, the whole time we were at the hospital in Colorado Springs, every doctor who walked in assumed I was in the car with Rachel because I had stitches on my face. And I was like, nope, totally unrelated.
So we looked crazy, but nope, it was all like random. Really random accidents, but I kind of believe that I'm really not that upset about it at all anymore. I feel like it was like maybe a blessing in disguise. Very scary.
Something that came to me as I was sitting in the hospital up for, I don't know, my 30th hour or so, was that emergencies give you perspective. It puts everything into perspective, like immediately you're like, oh, that's not important, don't care about that.
Yeah.
And the people who matter and who, you know, you love are just like, oh, it's just so easy to see what's important when you're in those situations. And yeah.
The fact that your dad, who just had knee surgery, slept on marble or like whatever, tile floor, just because he wouldn't like leave my side. The fact that my parents were like trying to figure out how to do anything to come there immediately. My sister, your family, your mom's not coming out, like, yeah. A family and friends. Kristen's gonna now come out with Luke. Like, family and friends are the most important thing.
It was great. I mean, it does make you feel good. Shout out to all my fucking family and all the friends who are our family. You know,
yeah.
I do love technology. How like so quickly Kristen just started adding people to, like, we have me, Kristen, and Luke. And Rachel have a group thread, and suddenly it's like, oh, now we're going to add in Sabrina. Oh, now we're going to add in Zach. Just add people to this thread because they're all concerned, and they know, they're like, oh, they don't want me to have to retell the story 15 times. That was convenient. I love all my friends and family. And emergencies definitely, you know, put things in perspective, just lickety split. And that I am grateful for. And
grateful for the time me and Rachel just got to be together in the hospital. It was...
We had a blast.
We did have a blast. It was kind of, in a way, soothing and calming to just be, you know, next to your wife for 72 hours plus, I don't know, 84 hours. I don't know. We were there for 4 days. Five if you include the day before where I had to go get stitched up. Shout out to Gary. Great PA who stitched me up. And, yeah, there's so much more to the story, but, you know, we'll tell it more later, maybe. Who knows?
This story is entitled The Time I Joined a Cult. She says, "Hi, Rach. My name is Sarah." Hi, Sarah. "And yes, you can use my name because I'm going to play this episode for everyone I know if you use this on the show. First off, the required fangirling. I love your shows. I started Seven Deadly Sinners from episode 1, and I have preached Father Joe's story to more people than I can remember. I love your real talk. Thank you. That makes me feel good. And how you tell these stories, like you're talking to a friend." Well, because you are my friend. Sarah, don't call me a friend. I'll come find you. That's creepy. I take it back, but you never know. On to the story. Summer of 2022. This is recent. I was in a really bad headspace. I was learning to live with fibromyalgia, and I was drowning in a deep depression. Sorry. My pain management doctor recommended I see the practice therapist. We'll call him G. My first appointment went great. He was so down to earth, very friend vibes. He asked to meet my husband, so he had an idea of what my home life was like. He said all the right things as a therapist, as to make me believe I might be at bottom, but there was hope for brighter days ahead. I shared with him that I smoked weed, mostly for anxiety and my appetite. He quickly started focusing on my weed consumption as a root of all my problems, and I ate it up. He had convinced me that I had a real problem, but he had someone who could help. G put me in touch with one of his former patients that started a support group for people with any kind of brokenness in their lives. T was a former addict, currently living with chronic pain and health conditions. It was marketed as a group of people leaning on each other for support. I had never been a part of a group like this. I tend to be an introvert and keep my friend groups small. My first call with T lasted over an hour. He touched on every sensitive subject in my life and knew exactly what to say in response to them. Soon, there was once a week meetings. Innocent enough web calls where people would share what they were currently struggling with. The meetings were modeled after an AA program where you work steps toward overcoming your brokenness. After a month or two of weekly meetings and 1 to 2 individual calls with T per week, the first retreat was scheduled. T and his partner live in the mountains in Kentucky. Should have been a red flag. I agree with you, Sarah. That should have been a red flag right there. There's a lot of things in this already that should have been red flags, but I totally get it. I've been through some gaslighting similar to this. Not to make it about me, just letting you know, Sarah, you're not alone. These things exist. But yeah, red flags in hindsight. But how is one to know? But we will hear. The plan was for 6 group members to drive down and spend the weekend on their land. You know, the little voice when it tells you, this is dumb. But it isn't loud enough to change what you're doing. That was my whole drive down. I was driving solo, as a few people were already supposed to be there and others were joining later. As I neared their home, the worst thunderstorm I have ever driven through came out of nowhere. Red flag number 2. When I arrived, I was surprised to find that I was the only group member there. Several people had canceled, and it was going to be me and another girl who wasn't even there yet. Sarah, I'm scared. Luckily, my red flag reader turned itself on, and I was immediately uncomfortable. I was shown to my room, which was the house's living room that had been converted into a bedroom. Once alone, I decided the smart thing to do was to feign some illness and leave as soon as possible. After an hour or so of property tours and some time to unpack, I decided I would go with a migraine that I had to go home for to take care of. It was only a few hours' drive, so it would be semi-believable. T and his partner were not having any of it. T brought me into the house's addition that was modeled after a log cabin. He told me to just lay down on the couch and take a nap. I politely declined, but he was persistent. He assured me that when I woke up, the other member would be there and the real fun would begin. Should I have left? Of course. Did I? Nope. Laid down and took a nap. Looking back, I want to thwart myself on the head. Girl, we've all been there. The other girl arrived about 40 minutes after I woke up. We'll call her A. She was immediately the most charismatic person I'd ever met. She was warm and welcoming, treating me like we had been friends for years. I felt like I could tell her anything after only a few moments. She was a few years younger than me, but she was so mature and wise. I ate up everything, she said. The rest of the weekend rained, so we spent most of the time just sitting on the porch and talking. She invited me to her birthday party at her family home the next day. I was smitten. I wanted to be like her. So happy and outgoing, confident yet humble. The next day, we drove home early and I got ready for this birthday. This was so out of left field for me to go to a party where I don't know anyone for a girl I met yesterday. But I wanted the energy, the positivity. When I arrived, I saw the name on the front door, G. This girl was my therapist's daughter. Now I see that is such an odd situation to be in, but at the time I thought it was great. This support group is so good that G would send his own daughter. The family was welcoming and sickeningly sweet people. They brought me in like I had been around for years. I talked to a lot of people, had a good time. I was so excited about this new energy in my life. I attended meetings for a few more months until the next retreat was planned. This time, I was sure to have a carpool situation set up. Four of us drove down to the mountains in the fall. It was such a picturesque setting. When we got there, we found out what we were going to be doing while we were there. I was confused because the last retreat was relaxing, and all we did was talk and work through things. This time, though, we were building a chicken coop for their property. The location was on the other end of the property, so you'd have to drive to get there. We all loaded up in the back of T's pickup and headed over. When we arrived, we unloaded what was in the truck. Power tools, screws, a cooler with water, and a bunch of bananas. T showed us where he wanted the coop built, and the old barn where the scrap wood was. Luckily, there was already a structure on the spot, so it needed to be reinforced and repaneled. We got everything set up by 9 a.m. Then T left, just to go back to the house. We assumed he was running to grab something and we'd be back. Nope. He came back at 3 p.m. to check progress. He reluctantly agreed to run some of the girls back to the house to use the restroom and took us girls back out to get to work. We finished that night around 9 p.m. We were all exhausted, but we still needed to have a meeting that night. In that meeting, T described how manual labor is what really heals brokenness, as it forces you to think about God. And that's where I knew I was in a cult. Talk about an oh shit moment. Sarah, I have chills. Continuing on. When I got home, I started to distance myself from T. However, I still wanted A's energy and positivity in my life. Soon, she started to take a harsh tone with me about where I was at in my working steps. Her whole attitude had changed. If I wasn't 100% committed, I wouldn't have that friendship. The last time I spoke with her, she said she smelled weed on me and she was very disappointed. I stopped reaching out after that and haven't been in contact with anyone from the group since. I found out after that G and his wife are on the board for this small organization and were working to grow the group, apparently using vulnerable therapy patients, which has a whole other layer of ick to this situation. Since I left the group, I have had several friends admit to me that they knew it was a cult the whole time. Way to look out there, friends. Well, at least they weren't gaslighting you. They were letting you work through your shit. I don't know. Anyway, that's my story I live to tell. I fully believe everyone is capable of joining a cult. I'm with you, Sarah. I completely believe that. They know how to find you in your most vulnerable moments, and you're a hero, Sarah. Continuing with her story, she says, if you get the right people as the face and the charisma, they can convince you of anything. Hopefully, I can now see the signs and won't be boarding Charlie's bus anytime soon. You're funny. I like Sarah. Sarah's a star. Sarah's a star. Thanks for being a kick-ass podcaster. Keep telling stories and tell Greg hi.
Oh, all right. I even got a shout out. That was a great story.
I purposely didn't read it before. I read it on the podcast because I want to feel the emotion of like, holy shit, what's happening next?
Yeah, I was blown away too.
That's a cult. Yes, Sarah, definitely. You're right. That's a cult.
In a weird, like, therapy, probably going to take your health insurance money type of way.
They probably aren't even like able to take health insurance money.
I don't know.
They're just able to take your soul. But I like Sarah's perspective of like, anyone is susceptible to it. Like,
yeah.
Especially if you're in like a sad place, or even just like some people are just that charismatic where you're just like, all right, well, maybe I should do that now.
Like, I feel like it's a bad situation anytime any therapist wants to try to get to know you beyond the 1 hour appointment you have.
That's a good call. Always that's where it got call. Weird.
Also, like, best therapist I ever had. Definitely, I was worried. I was like, I admitted to my smoke weed. I admitted my drank alcohol. This is in my, you know, late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, not a big deal.
Yeah.
Not a big deal. Like, definitely, like, not a great thing either.
Yeah, you like, you're it, supposed to be, like
that's not your
people.
Issue here.
Yeah.
You know, so for, I think, anybody who's trying to pinpoint something and gaslight you on it in a therapy situation.
Yeah. Sarah, we're glad you came out and, now you'll be able to spot it quicker, you know? But don't be ashamed if you get lured into any situation again. But, like, I truly believe that that is, like, no one's immune to it. And I think sometimes, too, like, I've talked about many times on the podcast from that book, something that's, I've talked about it before. I wish I could remember the name of it. But a lot of times when you've been conned before, you're more easily connable. Which is fine.
Because you think it can't happen to me twice.
Exactly. Like, I learned from this.
It
but
is.
Like, but I, in my own instance, like, I was very gaslit and conned. And I was, like, very cocky about, like, fuck, that could never happen to me again. Not that it's happened to me that level again, but, like, I'm not saying I'm immune to it, though. Like, you know.
Yeah.
People know what they're doing.
Especially who are people after your, you know.
Well, they want free labor from you? I don't know. That's usually what cults are.
So well, they're just trying to like convince you to like them. And
well, they're trying to tell you there's something wrong with you. We can heal you. Also, come do free labor.
Yeah.
Sleep on the floor of a... There's only 30 people in this 8x9 room. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. Anyways, Greg, do you want to tell your listener tales?
Yes.
I'm excited because I only skimmed through it and saw Indiana. It looked good, but I was like, Indiana, Greg's telling
boom,
it.
Boom, baby. All right, let's do it.
Gang, I thought that was such a compelling story that I think we're going to end on that tonight. I like listening to, you know, listener stories when I fall asleep. I thought that was super compelling. You can also... you know, hear the first part of my Stranger Danger when it comes to trees. But I love you guys, and I hope you appreciate this week's episode. Sorry it's a little short, or not the normal content, but I loved our listener Sarah's story, and I love you guys, and I'm happy that Greg was here.
And I'll make sure we get the Indiana story on the next listener stories.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, I love you guys. Have a great night. We'll see you next week. Ooh.